your current position and, you know, what is your role and responsibility at your current institution?
Certainly. Right now, I'm a professor at the University of South Florida. I'm also the program coordinator for science education, and I've been there now for about 11 years. It doesn't seem like that long, but I'm getting older and time is flying by.
Okay. How did you begin your career in science education?
I'll try to give you the shortest version of that. But I began my career with a two-year degree in Associate of Applied Science in the Natural Sciences and Agronomy and Soil Conservation. It was a two-year degree, and didn't quite know what I wanted to do after that, except that I knew that I'd rather work with people rather than test tubes and beakers and flasks and doing soil analyses. As interesting and fun as it was, I didn't really want to think about doing that for the rest of my life. I went on for a bachelor's degree at State University of New York at Buffalo, and I went to State Teachers College, Buffalo State College at that time, and continued my work in the biological sciences, minor in physical science and earth science, and began taking education courses and did my internship, my student teaching up there. In New York State, to be permanently certified, you need to get a master's degree within 5 years. So I thought I'd go right on to Syracuse University to accomplish that. And something unplanned happened at Syracuse. I was able to talk my way into assistantship from day one of my master's degree, and which is, they've never done that before. Usually it's only PhD students that they hire for a assistantship. But somehow I got the right person at the right time and talked my way into a teaching assistantship at Syracuse University. And taught courses in genetics and evolution and methods courses as well.
As a master's student.
In a large, big, tiered lecture hall. It was pretty intimidating being a page ahead of the students at that time. But it was a good training experience. And at that point, I mean, having an office with other doctoral candidates, I began to understand that there's this broader field of science education out there. At the time, I only had an inkling that there was even a field out there, to be honest with you. And of course, once you're immersed in that kind of university environment with other PhD students, you begin to learn real fast that there's a whole network of relationships that go on with our own field, as you know. And just stayed right on to go into a PhD degree for science education.
Who were some of the people that you worked with during that time?
At that time, my main mentor was a man named Larry Schaefer, who had a physics background and was the most creative teacher I saw in terms of teaching methods. And even though he's done this course for years and years, he'd sit down before every class and rethink how to present something in a little bit of a different way and more nuanced way. And it was very creative, so it was good training. I worked with Ann Howe, who was a former president of NARST, and Marvin Druger, to some extent. He wasn't on my committee, but obviously worked with him and co-taught a course with him, a methods course. And at that time, probably my best friend and fellow graduate student was Norm Letterman. He came in a few years after I started the program, or maybe about a year after I started it or so, and we hit it off real well. So we went through school together, graduate school together, so I've probably known him longer than anybody else in NARST. I still talk to him.
Well, that's a good sign.
See him quite regularly at meetings, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's an impressive figure, and he's impressed me a lot, influenced a lot of my work. We'll probably talk more about that later.
How about your dissertation? Where did you begin with your research?
Well, whenever I had an option to take an elective course, even at the undergraduate level, I always took a philosophy course or a psychology course because I just had some affinity for it. It interested me. And as I went on in graduate school, I began to see some underlying relationships between areas in developmental psychology and philosophy and things that I wanted to do with respect to getting kids engaged in and reason and learn and think in the science realm. And so I began taking a lot of courses in the Cultural Foundations Department, which subsumed history, philosophy, and sociology of education. And there was one gentleman there who was the chair of that department by the name of Thomas F. Green. And now the time to talk a little bit about him, I can do that. I respect a lot of people, but I wouldn't say I put people up on pedestals. You know, people are just people. I made an exception in his case because he struck me as, you know, the exemplary case of an eminent scholar. And the seminars I had with him, I took every course he offered, 5 different courses with him, and some other courses from other people in the Cultural Foundations Department. And, you know, the kind of things that we were reading paralleled my interest, and there were topics in, you know, moral education, moral philosophy. And I became interested in Kohlberg's work at the time as well, too. So Thomas F. Green ended up being on my committee, but in order to really learn some of the presuppositions and the details of moral developmental theory, I convinced, again, my chairperson, who was pretty open about it, to send me to Harvard University for part of a summer to take a long workshop with Larry Kohlberg, whose work you probably know for theories of moral development, and met some other postdoc students there by the name of Marvin Berkowitz, one person in particular. I'll talk about him later. And their work obviously influenced me and then get me really thinking about how people progress and reason and learn and make, you know, decisions based in social justice. And I began to sort of apply that to science education. No one really had been doing that kind of work in science ed before, so I needed to find the bridge to science education and convince people that this was something of merit, because at that time people would say, moral reasoning, what does that have to do with science education? And my answer was fundamentally everything, but I needed to convince people of that. And so the foundation of my work began with looking at mitigating factors of moral reasoning in science education.
And this was during your doctoral degree?
And that was during my doctoral degree.
So did your doctoral dissertation specifically looked at some of those?
That was the exact title.
That was the exact title.
Right.
Okay.
I had a previous title, but I changed it. I don't know if this is off the record or on the record. The first title was, Why There's So Many Assholes in the World. But that wasn't going to get by the committee. And so they asked me to modify that title to identify mitigating factors of moral reasoning in science education. And at that time, I looked at the capacity of people to reason both with formal reasoning ability and the differences between that and moral reasoning ability. And there's a little gap or a decalage between those two reasoning structures. And I tried to explain, in part, why that gap exists. And I look at things like attitudes and comprehension of the area under consideration when people made judgments about that.
So at that time, I think STS was in full swing, right? 80s, around that time?
It was coming up on the horizon, because I began my master's degree in 76. And finished my doctoral degree by 82. And STS was sort of coming on the horizon, and it would hit the scene a little bit after that.
Because one of your pieces talk about providing a theoretical framework for STS, and that's how you transition your work from STS to SSI.
Right, if I can clarify, if I may.
Sure.
The STS movement didn't really provide any kind of framework for my work. In fact, at that time, I saw that it seemed to be lacking some crucial elements that I thought were important based on the work that I'd been doing. And that framework would eventually, 20 years later or so, be known as Socio-Scientific Issues, SSI. But if you want me to jump ahead to explain that framework a little bit and the differences, became interested in several aspects that I thought connected in some way to you know, moral development and moral reasoning. And I tried to find segues or portals into science education where it makes sense to look at that kind of work. And so I began doing some work in several areas. One included, to some extent, some nature science work with Norm Letterman. Another finger or branch was looking at argumentation and discourse and fallacious reasoning as well. And another work was looking at little developmental differences in moral judgment and cognitive abilities as well. And then looking at also some sociological factors about the structure of society and how people, you know, think and reason in groups. And eventually I realized that the STS movement really didn't provide in my opinion, a sound theoretical framework for its existence. To me, it seemed more like an ideology in search of a theory than something that came from a theoretical base. And so I saw STS as being a great advancement to begin thinking about connections among science and technology and society. And some individuals would begin to incorporate some elements of moral problems in that. But at best, I saw STS only alluding or kind of pointing out possible moral conflicts of problems or ethical considerations, but it didn't really compel people to seriously think and work their way and negotiate their way through these problems with respect to looking at character development, trying to see how people can progress through epistemological sophistication and different levels of epistemological reasoning. And I suppose that lack of a strong theoretical framework or structure enabled me to begin combining those areas that I was looking at in a way that laid what I thought was a better theoretical underpinning for developmental thinking and consistent with what people do in character education for social justice. And that's why eventually I was able to, many years later, kind of synthesize that work together and kind of incorporate that into the SSI or Social Scientific Issues Framework.
Now, it sounds like this connection began quite early in your career.
It did. I remember writing a piece that was a paper. It didn't get into a published form, but I presented it at an STS conference, the one and only one that I ever went to, in Crystal City, Washington, D.C. And the title of the paper had something to do with STS and the missing link in science education. And to me, that missing link was the things that would many years later come to unfold. But I probably couldn't articulate it well, and it wasn't probably a very popular position to take.
Well, I was going to ask,
how did that go?
What the general reaction was at that time?
Polite, you know, nods and next. After that, we have another presenter at this point. And quite frankly, I don't think my thoughts were well developed at that point. You know, and I look back at them, and I look, I have that paper, and I look at it, and I said, yeah, it's not going to convince anybody yet.
So, what advice would you have for doctoral students in terms of developing their line of inquiry, especially, let's say, if they're